I suppose I have to unchair this meeting, but look, I can't see the screen point, but I can see that Howard wants to speak and I can see that Dana wants to speak. In the meantime, I'll try and get my screen back. Okay, Howard.
I think Darren was on before me.
Yeah, maybe he was, but I think if you're going to have somebody's going to be the chairman, let the chairman decide. So can you speak first?
All right, okay. All right, yeah. Right, two things. First of all, Nick Rack. We know Nick Rack. He's a sort of bit of a hotshot lawyer, among other things, and he's got a website. And the statement that Adam read out was from his website. And it was great, actually. And I wrote back to him and said, look, with a position like that, you should be in the Socialists, you should be in the SPGB, why not? He never replied. So that's just sort of one observation. There are people around who are very, very close to us, but somehow I don't think we're sort of doing the right thing. The other thing I wanted to say was that there's a bit of a misapprehension about these 800,000. They say they've got sort of 800,000 almost members, although it's not a party as such yet. 23,000 in Wales, where I live. Well, actually, I'm one of those 23,000 because at the meeting I went to in Swansea, was it last week? You were asked to give your name and address if you wanted to receive, email anyway. If you wanted to receive. Ongoing information about the party. And I did that. Why not? But I realise now that I'm being counted as a member or prospective member. So I don't know how many of the 800,000 aren't actually people who are going to join them or not. It's hard to know because it's all so informal at the moment. So just sort of something to bear in mind there. The 800,000 is probably a sort of significant overestimate of people who are likely to become members of that party when it sort of, sets up properly.
Okay, thanks. Incidentally, Nick Rack did reply to you. If you look on the website, what he said was, "I have my criticisms of the SPGB, but I don't recall ever expressing them in writing." Which, anyway, he did in fact, reply.
Oh, thanks for that, Adam. Okay.
He didn't reply immediately. He replied a couple of days later. But it's, anyway, it's not as hot as it might have been, actually. But, I mean, he obviously doesn't agree with us. He was, after all, the editor of Militant in its day. Darren.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hello? Yes.
Okay. A couple of observations where I think maybe there could be some traction to this left party in comparison to the other left of Labour splits that Adam mentioned historically. I'll go with the easier one first. I generally think that there is definitely going to be electoral reform. I really do think that's in the cards. I think for two reasons, as mentioned previous meetings. One is this Labour government with this massive parliamentary majority is in danger of being wiped out, the red wall times 10, the collapse of the red wall times 10, that's a possibility. Obviously things can change between now and the next election, but I find it very hard to see Starmer turning these things around. And I think the Labour Party's upper echelons might turn in and say, in light of this, we secured this massive majority with a minority vote. We might just lose like 6 or 7%, but lose like 250 seats. And they might turn in and say, now become advocates of electoral reform. Electoral reform means that other parties will be represented, reform, Greens more, and maybe this left your party. That's a possibility. I think the second reason why I think it has maybe more traction than the other parties of the past is I think it's just obviously apparent now that the Labour Party itself is different to its historical form. The Labour Party historically was always prepared to accept a left wing within its ranks, within its broad church. And there was occasions when that left was in a position of authority. You could think of Bevan you know, in the 40s and 50s, you could think of Wilson. Wilson was a left candidate. Then the 60s, Kinnock was a left candidate. Obviously, that's kind of changed. That's changed. The Labour Party, the way it treated Corbyn, the way it saw Corbyn and other people like him as a liability, where they could no longer tolerate that left as this kind of like tame opposition within its ranks, because Corbyn had become leader through some sort of freak accident in 2015, that Labour Party no longer exists where it wants to like have a left wing, which could arguably be in a position to do what Corbyn did 10, 15 years ago. So that means, where do these people go? You know, these people historically voted, you know, they held their nose and they voted Labour, just like the Trotskyists, even though they knew that it was pretty much going to be just capitalism, business as usual. So where do these people go? It's hundreds of thousands of people, take on board Howard's point, maybe not as many as the sites they're claiming, but these people did exist. You know, Corbyn's party did have this surge in membership. You did have the mass rallies. He did have the enthusiasm. Some have obviously gone to the Greens, but there's obviously this, I'm not going to say personality cult around Corbyn, that's kind of a bit kind of cheeky, but there's definitely an identification with Corbyn as like in America with Sanders, as like our guy, you know, and that carries its own dangers eventually, because Corbyn's not a young man and he's eventually either going to retire or die and what happens. But at the moment, he has a lot of goodwill and a lot of people, because of that, are prepared to sort of coalesce around him. So I think that's two reasons why your party could sort of exist in the foreseeable future. And as Adam says, you know, as socialists, we do have to like point out the obvious, that we are talking about a party which historically would have been quite happy and content within the Labour Party itself. You know, Corbyn's a Benite. You know, that was his politics. He was, you know, he worked with Trotskyists, etc. He was essentially like a left wing Labourite, Benism, and he'd have been quite happy to stay in the Labour Party even now if he hadn't been sort of kicked out or, you know, made it difficult for him. So our arguments are essentially the same, even though these people are now outside the Labour Party. They're still putting forward policies that we've always argued. However well-meaning, however, you know, like we understand it's a reaction against the, you know, the iniquity of capitalism, class society. They're basically putting forward a capitalism without the rough edges, and the, you know, it's just not possible. With regards to what Nick Rack, Adam said, I think he shared it on one of the forums where Nick Rack had spoken at the CPGB's Communist University. Where he said a lot of things, in speech form that Adam sort of quoted. Yeah, I mean, I it's very interesting to hear somebody like that from a Trotsky's background arguing essentially like a variation of what we would argue, which makes it all the more intriguing what he's expecting to do in your party, you know. And I kind of listened to the end where he kind of expanded. And he's basically going to be like a vocal, like a loyal opposition. You know, he's arguing a version of socialism, which we have some sympathies with, but, you know, they're not going to win the vote. They're not going to get the support. So what do they do then? What do they do now? They're basically going to be in a party which is putting forward a left-wing version of capitalism, you know, like a social democracy, Scandinavian style, or whatever you want to call it. You know, so I don't really understand where he's coming from, except to sort of look at examples from like 100 years ago, 110 years ago, where you'd have the old ILP, Independent Labour Party, or the Social Democratic Federation, groups like that, who essentially agreed with us. We never claimed a monopoly on what socialism was. They agreed on the final goal. They just basically said, well, that's how we get it, is through reforms or through a minimum maximum programme. And it seems very much a repetition of that. And maybe because Rack himself is from this Trotskyist background, maybe he doesn't realise that. Maybe he thinks he's hit on something new, something unique, you know, because he's from transitional politics of, you know, revolution, reform or revolution. And maybe he just doesn't realise that these debates took place over 100 years ago. And I still think our argument against that form of practical politics is still pretty good. You know, you basically, sorry, I've spoken too much. Thanks very much. Cheers.
You haven't spoken too much. Anyway, Andy next, and then Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Adam, and thanks to the previous speakers as well. They made some very interesting, useful points. I haven't got anything very profound, really, to add into that, really, but to reflect upon my own political experience. And when I was 17 and 18, I thought, the what really politicised me, I suppose, obviously, like many people of my age group, was what was happening in the country with, sort of economic situation. Everybody was fed up in the 70s. Everyone was on, there were strikes everywhere. Punk rock happened. And a lot of it, in Birmingham where I lived, there was a lot of felt like a decaying kind of society, really, a post-war sort of society, where everything was meant to be getting better and everything was getting worse, and you were sort of 17 or 18 and looking towards a future that looked very bleak in 1981 and 1982 in that time. And I just remember, thinking, Foote, Michael Foote and Tony Benn and people like that, they could offer this kind of, to me as a kid then, a youngster, that's an alternative. And I can understand now why a lot of people who, generations later could see somebody like Jeremy Corbyn in sort of a similar type of way, but Jeremy Corbyn was probably around then anyway. He was around quite soon after that. I was sort of quite aware of him because I think he was an MP at one time in Shropshire, he was reported on in the news quite a lot in my formative years, and he was obviously much much younger then. But the point that I think, bringing things more up to date now about that, I sort of, think of the cliche that we know, history repeats itself first as tragedy and second time as farce. And I sort of get the impression that's probably what Corbyn's new project will turn out to be, really. Obviously, the Labour Party now, as Darren was explaining, it has no left wing. It has no desire to have a left wing. So the people who feel any affiliation with, disenfranchisement from the mainstream parties are going to look either to the right or to the left of these available political options. But I think the one thing that has changed in respect of the Labour Party, and again, Darren touched on this, but probably maybe in a way differently from the way I think about it. But, and please don't take this the wrong way in the way I'm explaining it. It's just that this is the only language I know how to explain this point, is that, really ultimately the composition of the working class in Britain in particular, I'll use that as the example because it's the one I know, live every day. Eileen, stay where you are. Is that the composition of the working class is different. For example, my dad voted Labour all through my younger years, I don't know what he voted for later on when he got, middle-aged and older, but certainly in the 70s and 80s, my dad voted Labour. My dad worked at the Lucas factories in Birmingham. He was a factory worker. There was a mass of workers working in those industries. It was the engineering and electric, early stages of the electrical kind of chip industry and that type of thing. But that's all, that's not all gone, but any kind of really meaningful union identity, what some people call trade union consciousness, doesn't exist in the same way now, really, does it? So that was what the sort of the left of the Labour movement relied upon, certainly in my lifetime that I can relate to. It just doesn't exist anymore, does it really? You know, so there's been such a fundamental shift in the lived experience of people who go to work, you know, these people purport to represent. It just seems to me that it's just like another rabbit hole really to go down, and it'll be a flash in the pan. So that's just some thoughts really. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Steve, and then Mike. Okay, Steve.
Yeah, just quickly. I'll be going to the one that they've organised in Bolton this coming week, and I totally agree with Adam. If there's anybody that has this sort of meeting locally, we've got to bid them. We've got to go down and just put the case that we've got capital as now a world market, and we can't let workers go down this fucking nonsensical route of trying to the labourite idea, the lefty idea that there's somehow a way of controlling the economy. We've got to go down. It's, you know, otherwise what you're doing as socialists, if you don't go out and challenge these ideas when it's local to you, what on earth are you doing? The other thing about this, Adam mentioned Communist Future, I was actually at one of their meetings, and there happened to be Nick Rack as well in there at the time, and they were doing a sort of a post election feedback. And it was really interesting because I put to these people, well, how on earth, there are about a dozen of Communist Future members in their in this meeting, and I just not at all innocently asked them how on earth they dealt with the idea about human nature when they were talking about communism on the doorstep, and only one of them had said, oh, we came across that, and we didn't know how to answer it. Now, what struck me is really, really odd. If these people had been out on the doors canvassing for a communist future, they'd never, ever come across the idea, that they'd never come across the objection of human nature. So one wonders what on earth they were talking about. I don't think they were talking about communism at all. But on this talking about socialism website, I don't know how many of them there are. I've looked, and there seems to be several authors, but I'm assuming they're very, very tiny. However, their declaration of principles could have been is just an update of ours, except for little bits about we will have our representatives will get the average wage, you know, but apart from that, it's pure Socialist Party of Great Britain, and no wonder the Stalinists accuse them of being SPGBists, because they are. Unfortunately, there are very few of them, and they seem mesmerized by this idea of what the carbon lot are doing, and it will all end in tears for them, because we know if they're going to put forward the end to wage labour as a commodity, then they'll be laughed out of court by this bunch of reformists that are going to be just proposing. As far as I can see, the only actual thing that I've seen from these people is the nationalisation of the monopolies that will help to serve the capitalist class, the transport, energy, water, and another I can't remember at the moment. Just seems, you know, they're still at that level of absurdity as far as we're concerned. Right, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Mike.
Thanks. Maybe I'm a bit more optimistic than Steve. I like to think that sort of a sizable chunk of some of the people in these sort of emerging far left groups will sort of be able to sort of see through this new party. But yeah, I think it, the Your Party or whatever it'll end up being called, we'll sort of draw in a lot of energy from a lot of the maybe not quite so far left, but the the bulk of those who are sort of to the left of Labour. And there can't be many people who describe themselves as far left as Labour supporters now. So, but yeah, I think the new party will sort of suck a lot of energy in, give people the wrong idea about sort of radical politics, and it sort of end up as yet another sort of cul-de-sac as Left Unity has. But I think one difference for Your Party compared with Left Unity or other sort of split-offs from Labour is that the context is different now, isn't it? Politics these days is sort of dominated by immigration and the rise of the right, and there's been a sort of a backlash against the left, which wasn't around a few years ago. So they've got that to contend with as well. The right wing sort of resurgence against identity politics, and with nationalism and patriotism being sort of emphasised and normalised. So they've got more of an uphill struggle in the sense of being a left wing a populist left wing party trying to counter that kind of populist right wing ideology, which is quite prominent at the moment. So anyway, that's my two penneth. Other than I'll share that Zara Sultana wanted me to muster under her banner. I think it was at the 2019 general election. I was in Coventry at the time, and she was sort of part of a rally in the main sort of market square there, and I just happened to be standing next to her. I didn't recognise it was her at the time, I was listening to whatever speaker was on, and all of a sudden she turned to me and said, "Oh, grab my banner." I didn't sort of know what to think, but she sort of just handed it to me and then sort of went to the podium to speak. I immediately put it on the ground. I should add, I didn't wave her banner around in support. She was quite sort of professional in the way she spoke. She was very slick, and very sort of spontaneous. But yeah, she was a bit blunt, really, in expecting me to grab her banner. Anyway, that's beside the point. Yeah, thank you for listening to me witter on. Thank you.
That's Sister Anna. Right, Paddy.
It occurs to me, I don't think anybody's mentioned this yet, but it occurs to me that the prospects for this new party, Your Party, whatever they're going to call it, are bound to be inversely tied to the fortunes of Reform UK, in the sense that I think there's quite a good chance that, because Reform are riding so high at the moment, I think there's quite a good chance that they'll peak too soon, especially because they've got so many Reform councillors, and they've got 3 years to basically balls it up on councils. That will they be still smelling of roses in 3 years' time when it's a general election, or will people have decided that no, actually they're pretty useless on local councils, in which case, as I say, they might have peaked too soon. If that was to happen, then I think Corbyn's Sultana's new party might have a chance. But if Reform are still looking strong towards the next election, then a vote for Corbyn's party is going to split the Labour vote, and it will just I think the general awareness is that will be inviting Farage into number 10, which a more awful prospect few can probably imagine. So I do think if you want to see how Corbyn's Sultana's party is going to do, you need to look at what's happening with the Reform.
Yep. Of course, there'll be a test before then. The local council elections next May, besides Wales and Scotland, you've got all the councils in London being like, I mean, some of them are for about 80 or 90% Labour. I'm sure that's not going to be the case after elections in May. I think the Green Party and this new party will make some headway. The Reform might, but more likely to be at the expense of the Tories. Anyway, Howard, do you want to come back?
I think we need to be careful about the crystal balling. There's the famous saying, a week is a long time in politics. Okay, I don't think much is going to happen over the next week, but a hell of a lot can happen over the next 3 or 4 years. Paddy's talking about, interestingly, about reform and its inverse sort of relationship with Corbyn's party. But, reform is a party that depends entirely on one person. Now, Farage may sort of, have a heart attack or something and can no longer lead the party in the next couple of years. Anything could happen. And if that happens, I think there's a fair chance, I'm crystal balling now, fair chance reform will collapse because, there'll be no one to replace him. And, where would things be then politically? We don't know. I mean, we can talk about it, all right, amongst ourselves. It's quite interesting, quite amusing. But I don't think we should sort of, take our predictions or other people's predictions too seriously. Don't forget, people said that after Boris Johnson was elected in 2019, they said the Labour Party was finished, would never come back again. Well, they were completely wrong because it has. And it may well be that the current Labour Party can hang on longer than people imagine.
Yeah, I see that Farage is predicting a general election in 2027 in 2 years' time, but once again, he's crystal ball. Right, Freddie.
Yeah, thanks. There's been a huge deal said tonight by not only yourself, Adam, but other speakers so far. And what attracted me to tonight's meeting was is what should, I can't remember it verbatim, but the, what should I?
I was just looking at the split, and there are 23 people. I'm afraid he stopped.
Hello?
Sorry.
Somebody else is speaking. Can you hear me?
Sorry, Freddie. It was me. It was a mistake. Sorry about that. Carry on.
No problem, Howard. No problem. I mean, I'll sort of cut to the chase on it. Tonight's subject matter was what should our approach be or what should our attitude be to new organisation with our party or your party, whatever it is it's called. I mean, quite frankly, our position should be what it is always against all these other organisations. We're hostile to them, are we not? And, so far everything that's been said tonight, you can't help but agree with all the speakers. Our position is quite clear. Or it's certainly clear to me, we're hostile to them. Now, some of the things that have been said about reform and workers' parties, workers' party and other left-wing parties, we've largely seen those come and go before in the past. And somebody spoke about Corbyn, maybe not so much a personality cult. Well, Corbyn is very much a personality cult. If anything that was going on at the Durham Miners Gala was about when people were flocking to see him there, it was very much a personality of Corbyn. And when it was mentioned there earlier on about reform, etc., and their potential phasing out, or they may win a few seats in the next election, etc. Then on the other hand, if this organisation, your party, makes any sort of inroads at all, then they could almost be an antidote to reform to some extent. But let's cut to the chase on it. these organizations and the business are trying to run capitalism. That's what it's about. And our approach should really be, we don't need a huge debate. We know we should be getting out on the street to the best of our ability with the numbers of people that we have and doing things like leafleting, selling standards, having our own propaganda meetings, etc. Because, as I say, we've seen these organisations come and go. We've seen what Labour did in the mid-80s, roughly. I think it was the mid-80s, with people like Derek Hatton and Militant, etc., throwing them out of the party, getting rid of Corbyn. Now, Corbyn might be a pretty decent guy sort of overall, but he ain't a socialist. He's not a threat to us in the sense of he has a threat to some extent. He's a distraction from socialism. So as I say, you know, the purpose of tonight's meeting, what our approach should be, is quite simple. For me, it's quite simple. We carry on doing the best that we can as socialists and propagate the socialist case and showing these other people up for what they are, be it the Derek Hattons of old, or who else was, I can't remember all the names just now, but for me it's quite simple. We carry on doing the best that we can do as a party and show these others up for what they are. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Just one thing first, Cormac. The title of the meeting wasn't "What is our attitude to the new party?" It was "What do we think about it?" I mean, if it had been, I think there's no argument about what our attitude is, but perhaps it should have been "What is our reaction to this party?" We're not going to just do nothing. I'll take anyway.
Surely our reaction should be what we always do.
Yeah.
Well, not socialists.
As long as we do it and go to these meetings and hand out leaflets. Okay, Qumran.
Thanks, Adam. I've been reading quite a few SPGB articles from the archive recently, and I came across one where the SPGB kind of rejects the label of the left, and I had some interesting discussions at the summer school with some people about this category. And so I'm wondering why go to these meetings and leaflet when you also have like reform, also organizing, and perhaps actually the working class are more oriented towards reform. Why not go to these reform institutions or meetings and leaflet outside those places if the left itself as a category is kind of rejected? I mean, isn't that almost like preaching to the converted? And secondly, maybe a more remedial question that's kind of screaming out to me, what should a socialist party be? Like fundamentally, we could say, you know, they don't have the right program or whatever, like this kind of Trotskyist line, but like, you know, really, what should a socialist party do, like day to day, right? That I don't know. Your party perhaps is not fulfilling, or maybe it is. So yeah, just these two questions. Thanks.
Well, we've actually have a debate inside the socialist party as who we should, what our target group should be. And of course, in theory, it should be the whole working class, but in practice, I think most people who join our party enter from the left. They'll have been Labour Party people who supported CND, anti-war people, and so on. It's not not entirely, but it will be anyway because of the language that we use. If we talk about capitalism, socialism, the class struggle, and so on, we'll tend to attract people who are already using those using those words. Should we go and leaflet the reform demonstration? Well, there's one in London next Saturday, which we're going to demonstrate. I mean, I suppose we could experiment by going to both and seeing what reaction we get. But as I say, in practice, most people who join, most people here, I suspect, will have been in the Labour Party or something like that, or the Communist Party, even before. As to your second question, I mean, I'll let Andy come in a minute. I think what socialist, the only thing the Socialist Party can do in present circumstances, which is where, as you say, most people want or put up with or accept or acquiesce in capitalism. The only thing that we can do usefully is argue the case for socialism. So our role is what used to be called propagandist, but will be more like educational and conscience raising by just arguing the case for socialism and not getting involved in day-to-day reforms and so on. I mean, that the role of a socialist party today can only be that for if it's going to make any sense. But I'll let other members come in to answer your points. Andy.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks, Qumran, as well. That was, your questions are very pertinent, really. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be at the summer school this year, and I'm sure I would have enjoyed talking with you as well as other members. And Adam's answered, what I was going to say really on the second point, which is really, I'm sure you're already, already kind of in tune with all of this anyway, but really we are limited in what we can do as an organisation due to the size of the organisation at the moment. But also that education and consciousness raising is really very important, very key to this. I came into the party from having sort of flirted around the edges of some of the most, I don't know what you call them, really, quite rigorous, I suppose, intellectually rigorous Trotskyists, they thought they were anyway. I was never a member of those groups, but they wanted me to be a member. And on the reform point, I thought that's really a really good point to raise, actually, because I think it's something we perhaps need to, not necessarily about reform specifically, but about people and this kind of working class people who are just basically, fed up with, the mainstream of politics. They're looking for other things, or they're just dissatisfied with life in general. A couple of anecdotes, and I won't witter on, I hope, too much, but earlier on in the evening, I brought some shopping in. I'd come back from work, and I'd been at Lidl, and I was carrying these two shopping bags into the house. And there's a woman who lives just on the corner, and she walks the poodles of the bloke who lives across the road. He inherited these poodles from his parents. Now, this bloke never speaks to me, ever. I've lived here for 23 years. He's lived here longer, and he lived there with his late parents. Never, ever speaks to me, right? But I said, oh, Pam, you're walking the dogs. They keep you busy, don't they? She said, yeah, well, Paul's not here. He's at a conference. And I thought, oh, well, that must be nice. Maybe it's something to do with his trade or something like that. And then I thought, well, hold on. The news was on when I walked into the house. Eileen was listening to the news, and of course, Reformer in Birmingham. I thought, yeah, that's where he's going to be. The bloke who lives next door to him in the house that's just across the road from me as well. Well, he lives there, like Family Guy, and all the rest of it. 20 odd years ago, I invited them over to come and get to know them a bit, have a drink and whatever. And then this guy came into my house. Oh, you're interested in politics, Andrew. Good heavens. Oh, well, I wouldn't agree with you then, looking at your books, looking at your place. I'm a fascist, he said. Yeah, I believe that this country's just for people who are from here, Lived all his life in this street. His parents live in the street, and his son now lives in the street as well, in a different house. And in the local pub as well, it's like that. There's former BNP members, all sorts of people like that. Yeah, outwardly, it's a really respectable sort of neighbourhood, a white neighbourhood. So the reform thing is really getting traction. There's no doubt about it. One more little point about this as well is that my local MP is called Wendy Morton. She was Liz Truss's chief whip. So Wendy has befriended me on Facebook, not under my real name of Andrew Davies or Andy Davies. Now, on Facebook, I use a pseudonym. I don't ever call myself that, my own real name on Facebook. But I'm befriended by Wendy Morton on there. And so she was on Question Time last night or the night before, and I pulled her up on a couple of points about the economy and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I got a lot of likes, actually, from local people on this point that I made about Wendy's shaky ground with the economy and the bond yields in the markets and so on. So I thought, oh, great, I've got all these likes for what I've just posted on Wendy's Facebook. When I looked at them, you know, I made it clear I'm not a Labour Party supporter, I'm not a Tory, etc. I didn't mention Reform or any other party, didn't mention our party either. But everybody that clicked on it, like, they had flags, England flags on their own Facebook pages. So this is really gaining a lot of momentum now. And, you know, the point about Corbyn and Farage, whatever, like, you know, they could just fall off their perches anyway in the next 2 years, both of them, you know, and then where would that lead us? So I have wittered, sorry, but hey, it's good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks anyway. Okay, Darren and Mike again. Are you there, Darren? Yeah, okay, we can hear you.
Hi, yeah, sorry if there's some background noise, I'm outside. To address Kieran's first point about should we be talking to these people? Of course, and as he's looked at the history of the party in the archive section, he'll notice that we've always made a point, because of our belief in free speech, to debate with all political spectrums. You know, so, you know, it's there. We've debated, you know, from a very, very inception with people on the right, which I don't think a lot of people on the left, take his point about the left, actually do. I think it would be, you know, obviously we should explore the avenues of possibly debating with these people. The actual public debate is not what it was. But I, to be honest, I think it would be kind of interesting to actually debate with a Reform person, because there's such a misconception right now of socialism. And, you know, even in comparison to, like, thinking about 40, 50 years ago, you just know that the first half hour of the debate would actually be just explaining that who they're debating with is not who they think they're debating with. That's the reality. And maybe that's why we take the easy option of talking to the left, maybe, because there is even if the terminology is wrongly interpreted, there's certain words that are used commonly, and we can maybe try and sort of engage with them from that basis. But you could just imagine the way the left, you know, as a general term, or socialism as a general term, has been totally sort of demonized social, you know, on social media the last 10, 15 years, as they really wouldn't even know how to address this, you know. So maybe that's the reason why we've not engage with these people as much. But of course we have to engage with them, because at the moment a significant number of the working class are receptive to these ideas, have chosen nation over class, are more receptive to racist ideas, are more, a lot of these racists who previously would not have raised their heads are now raising their heads. You know, I'm not saying that suddenly there's an explosion of racists. I think, unfortunately, just these people feel that they can say shit like this. No, you know, we have to challenge that. We have to address that. But, you know, we're limited in our numbers. The second question that Kieran raised about, you know, how a socialist party operate, I personally am not in a position to contribute, because I'm obviously living in the States. But it's a very fair question, and I hope other party members reflect on it, because obviously we can do as much as we can in our limited numbers, but there's obviously other certain things we could do a lot better. And that requires planning, that requires discussion. And, you know, this requires maybe a different meeting. Thank you.
Okay, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah, and I hopefully what I was going to say sort of flows on quite well from Darren's last point. Yeah, because I was going to say something in response to the second part of Qumran's question about sort of what is the role of the Socialist Party or a Socialist Party either. But I suppose as well as Darren's just said about being a vehicle, if you like, for communicating the principles and encouraging people to think about their class position and what can be done about it. But I think another important aspect of what the Socialist Party is to to the extent that we can put those principles into practice, obviously within the constraints of the arena that we have to operate in. But we can put some and do put some of our principles into practice. You know, having no leaders, that's one of the main attractions to the party for me. You know, as that sort of whole concept of leadership is something I despise. So it's good to have a sort of an oasis away from it. And also, of course, cooperative work. You know, putting that into practice as well, voluntary work, and. Having a democratic organisation. So yeah, to that extent, we can put socialist values into practice, and I think that's an important thing which the Socialist Party does. Yeah, cheers.
Okay, thanks, Janet.
Yeah, thank you. I'm following on from what the other comrades have said, really, but what I've found is that, as Adam said, people that come from the leftish side of politics are likely, more likely, to respond to our ideas. We wouldn't really know for sure because we aren't large enough people to spread ourselves out throughout society. I think if I went to a local garden party flower show, I might find someone that's sympathetic. But you don't do that, do you? You don't approach to somebody, a stranger, and start talking to him about politics. You have a forum in which that sort of discussion is useful, welcomed, and we have to jump in it. And I'm always admiring of the party members who do so much. You don't actually see their activities, but they're everywhere, really. One thing after another they're going to. Like this coming week, it seems that we'll be attending two political meetings. There's always a chance that spreading our net will catch somebody like that, hopefully. The other thing is, I think that my husband, Joe Carter, came into the party from a conservative background, as it happens. He happened to be sold a socialist standard from comrade Joe McGuinness, who was selling them outside Clapham High Street. And he bought one and got into conversation. And that was 50, 60 years ago when that happened. So it just shows that somebody doesn't have to have a left-wing political background to actually come into the party. It's just that we can't find them because when we can't spread ourselves so thinly in all the actions and activities that people get up to. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are, philosophically anyway, distressed by this present society and what's happening throughout the world. But to tie it all up into a political argument such as we have done takes a lot of thinking and a lot of social awareness, which is not easy to just reach without somebody else talking to you about it, I think. I'll stop there. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Anybody else want to say something? In recent years, we have had debates with UKIP, I think, but I mean debates sort of died out, haven't they? Well, I'll take up some of the points that were mentioned by people. Darren sort of argued that possibly proportional representation is on the cards. perhaps it ought to be from, but I don't know how it's going to come about, because a situation will have to arise where the main parties represented in Parliament will have to agree to it. I mean, I don't know whether the Labour Party will find itself in a desperate position. I mean, I don't know if you heard the news today from America, but you know, the Labour Party's ministers resigned. There's been a cabinet reshuffle and so on. So that, you know, maybe your prediction about the Labour Party not going the full term, might happen. If it did happen, then that certainly would save or create a favourable circumstance for the, you know, for the new party. But they'd remain a permanent minority party. I mean, some of the countries which the Scandinavian countries and Belgium and Holland have got left wing parties, which you know are represented in Parliament, but always with, you know, 10 or so members, and these ones actually call themselves socialists, which I don't think this new party will. But I mean, I think Dana made quite a valid point. What, you know, Starmer goes around saying, "I've reformed the Labour Party. It's quite different from what it used to be." And I think Darren's point is quite valid. What they've done is they've lopped off the left wing, and history might say that Starmer and his cronies, have gone too far. Because I would imagine that anyway, that there's probably 10, 15, even 20% of the population which would go along with left wingery, if you like to call it that. So that's the Labour Party's own tactical mistake, I think, in saying we are the party of business. We accept capitalism. We're going to try and make capitalism. Capitalism work. I think Steve's point about communist future and not understanding what human nature is, or not, probably because they didn't explain what communism was. I noticed that the SWP have regular meetings called what is human nature. So I mean, I don't know whether that makes the SWP is talking about socialism more than the. More than common in the future. I mean, I'm not sure, incidentally, that we would necessarily oppose the idea that any socialist councillor or MP should have a worker's wage. But I mean, we wouldn't advocate that, of course, as a policy thing. But we might insist that any MP or councillor hand over anything in excess of that to the party. Anyway, it's nearly 9 o'clock. Do we want to discuss the Green Party and their new leader who claims to be a socialist? That's going to be, I think, the struggle or the contest, if you like, who's going to get these 10 or 20% left of Labour people, or 20% have been kicked out of the Labour Party. Okay, Steve, are you going to talk about the Green Party conference? Are you?
Well, actually, can you hear me okay? Hello? Can you hear me okay?
No. You're a bit fuzzy.
We can sort of hear you.
you can hear me?
No, we can't. We can't hear you properly.
Give me a minute and I'll come back.
Are you outside as well?
That's worse.
No, that's better. Oh, it's worse again.
I can't hear a thing.
Okay, while sort himself out. Well, come round, wants to come back.
Something's going on with me.
Hello, can you hear me?
Steve.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay. I do apologise. I'm just making my tea at the same time. Just quickly, would people... by the way, can I just ask? I think our one of our attendees, I think we're getting his name wrong. Can you just confirm? Is it Cameron?
Yes.
It's Qumran.
I beg your pardon.
Adam says it correctly. Just copy Adam.
Right. Thank you very much. It's just that I've got somebody that works near me. He's called Cameron. He's a Persian lad. Right. I do apologise. So it's Qumran. Thank you for confirming that. Right. So just basically, I just wanted to say, is there any support in the meeting tonight for a specific leaflet for this Corbynite lot? If so, I mean, obviously, it would be a waste of time getting stuff printed if people aren't going to put it out. But you know, is there any support for that? And also, I think we definitely need to have some sort of specific text to attack the Greens, because of this nonsense that Polanski is coming about being a socialist. But just checking out what people think. Right, that's me.
Just to give a quick answer to that, our branch, London branch, has put down an item for discussion at the October policy meeting, or planning meeting, but that might be too late. I mean, that's in October.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
that might not have been launched. There'll certainly be these meetings going on. Well, let's try and get some more. I think Qumran next.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. I wanted to come back to something you said and also something that Mike said. So I think, Adam, you responded to say, like, the role this party has right now is what they used to call in the old days, like a propaganda group. I don't know. It kind of feels like it contradicts something that Mike says, because if there's, like, no leadership in the party, but doesn't a propaganda group necessarily seek to acquire ideological leadership over the working class? Like, rightly or wrongly, it's trying to convince the working class that socialism is like this, and we are the people correctly representing this idea. There was something else, but I've forgotten now. But yeah, so just this idea of leadership, it just seems a bit strange, because surely the SPGB is trying to get leadership over the working class. That's kind of the answer I got from perhaps the question of why not go and seek to leaflet outside Reform, because I guess you're not trying to get the left on board, but more the working class, if I'm right about that. So are you trying to get leadership, ideological leadership, over the working class? Thanks.
Well, we're not trying to lead the working class. That's the last thing we want to do. We're trying to get, if you like, the working class to act for itself. As ideas develop, some people will develop these ideas first. I mean, you can call them a vanguard if you like, because the people that develop these ideas first. In that sense, I suppose you could say we are ahead of the rest of the working class. But we certainly don't want to lead them. We certainly don't want to act on their behalf. Our basic principle is that, you know, it must be a do-it-yourself revolution. You know, the emancipation of the working class must be the work of the working class itself. So, I mean, it depends how you define vanguard or leadership. But I mean, we're not a political party either, in the sense of the vanguard Leninist parties, or in the sense of the parliamentary parties, which both accept the principle of leadership. They say, you know, trust in us, we'll do this for you. That's not at all what we're doing. We're saying, this is the position, you know, think for yourself and act for yourself, basically. Anyway, Mike, you wanted to say something, did you?
Yeah, well, I don't need to say half of what I was going to say, because you've put it better than myself. But yeah, I was going to make the same point as you just did, really. Maybe I could add that, the notion of ideological leadership sounds very odd to me. Leadership is a power relationship between sort of groups of people in a sort of a practical way, whereas sort of competing ideologies, the word leadership isn't sort of appropriate. It's which ideology wins out, and yeah. an ideology can apparently win out if a leadership imposes it strongly enough. But that's a power relationship. It's not about the sort of battle of ideas, if you like, that we're engaged with. So yeah, and it's, as Adam said, it's about encouraging people to think about their class position for themselves. The tone of our articles isn't you will think this. It's more, here's the evidence, here's the interpretation, here's why we believe the interpretation fits. That's not the tactic of a leadership structure. Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
Okay, thanks. Andy and then Steve again. Andy.
Yeah, I'd just like to reassure Qumran. I'm not sure if what your sort of situation is, comrade, whether you're a member or whether you're considering membership or etc. But I can assure you, that my own political journey involved hanging around with groups that most definitely were, based around democratic centralism and political committees that were all powerful and self-reinforcing, and ultimately represented a sort of ideological leadership. And the SPGB is nothing like that. I've been in the party now for getting on for 30 odd years now. I've known people like Mike Foster and Shannon and lots of people here for years and years, and we wouldn't tolerate anybody like having a big ego or anything like that. It just doesn't happen. The other point about the you may have been coming from as well was about the parliamentary sort of route to socialism and so on. That's hotly contested within the party anyway. And ultimately, as I see it, we want to achieve our object as a party, and then we won't need to exist. And that's the whole point about it all. So I hope that gives you some level of reassurance about any sort of leadership, sort of stuff. So, all right, thanks.
Okay, Steve?
Yeah, just to stress one thing, that we're not against leadership just for ideological purposes. What we are trying to set up a society which is basically without any form of economic coercion. And to do that, to go from a system of commodified wage, commodified labour power, to a society which has no form of economic exchange within it, does not require leaders. It requires a conscious working class, and it requires a majority of workers to be conscious of the advantages of that type of society, and that they should be willing to, first of all, establish it, and secondly, to run it from day one. Now, that is not something that any of these vanguard organisations seem to think about, but that is the reality of the situation that we are trying to create. Expropriate the capitalist class immediately requires a working a society which is proactive, that is willing to participate in the production and in the democratic organisation of that production without any form of wage labour. And to do that, they've got to be, our fellow workers have got to be aware of the advantages of that type of society for them. We cannot, this is why, to my view, this is why we have to insist on a conscious working class. And a conscious working class doesn't need leaders, because it's going to know where it's going. And I'm paraphrasing another comrade with that one. All right. Just to, okay. So it's nothing to do with the ideas. It's to do with the aim of the organisation.
Thank you.
Okay, Brian.
Thank you there, Adam. Yeah. Just to add to what Steve just said, what would be required to put into operation everything that he explained there is the whole of the working class would need to become leaders. And by that, I mean leaders with the small L, not with the large L, as you've got in the class rule, political class rule. No, leaders of the political class rule all come with a large L. What we're looking for is individuals to take on the responsibility to get stuck in and get the job done that's required to needed to get done. That might mean taking some initiatives, you know, nothing wrong with that. Oh, but in the main, it means the whole of the working class consciously understanding where capitalism is, what it's all about, and collaborating together to make sure that the means of production are used to the satisfaction of the whole of the citizenship in the global community. That's all it is. And, you know, like I say, that will require the whole of us becoming leaders with a small L, right? It's not vanguardism. It, what it means is people taking the initiative and ensuring that the production distribution of, production and distribution takes place under the common ownership and democratic community, global community. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Before I close the meeting, come around. Do you want to come back?
I mean, I think this is going to, it'll turn into another hour. Just to say one small point, I would just say, then why do you need the SPGB? Why not just self-liquidate if it's going to be the working class doing all the work? Like, what's the role of the SPGB then? Now, that's not like, I'm not trying to disagree, but just to provoke that. Like, so what's the SPGB for if it's not going to be vanguard? Like, I never use the phrase vanguardist, but this will be another hour debate. So,
okay, maybe we'll organize another one of these talks on that very subject. What is a vanguard? Right. Do you want to say something, anybody? Brian, you're still there, I see.
Yes, I in answer to the previous question, what is the role of the SPGB? The role of the SPGB is, like has previously been quoted, right, is put forward the socialist case, the idea of socialism, and how possibly to get there. That is the role, nothing else. Once we attain socialism, we would have fulfilled that role. So therefore, you know, we have no need to exist any further. We could all go away and drink our tea in comfort, I say.
Okay, thank you for that. Steve, to answer your question about whether we need another leaflet, I mean, isn't there a meeting of the executive committee tomorrow? Can't they decide to commission a leaflet and we can get things moving?
Yeah, it's just whether people want
to do the thing. The reason I raised it is to ask people whether they're willing to actually go out and use such a leaflet, because it will have something like, I don't know, if we create a leaflet called About Your Party, in 6 weeks' time, it'll be obsolete because they will probably change the name, etc. So it's just a case of, are people willing to get out and push this leaflet around?
Well, I think they are, isn't it? I think, I mean, Yorkshire branch is active, Manchester branch is active, Lancaster branch is active, Southwest regional branch, London branch, I think, Kent branch. I think people would come out and do it, but I hope I'm not saying something that won't happen. But anyway, Paddy.
Yeah. Well, actually, Steve, I wish you hadn't been cooking your tea and you'd asked this question an hour ago instead of at 9:05. But I don't think this is the time for a leaflet against them because they don't have any policies yet. We don't know what we would be attacking. If we had a leaflet now, it would be so impossibly vague, it would apply to almost any party. So I think it's probably better to wait and see what they come up with. And see how they constitute themselves, what they stand for. We can make guesses, but we don't know. So I personally would be in favour of waiting. But I mean, if you really want to go ahead and, you know, rush into a leaflet, do it by all means. But I don't think it would be particularly good. And as Adam says, in 6 weeks' time, as you said, it could be obsolete anyway.
Yeah, I said it.
you did, yeah.
But we know what they're going to say. Or at least that what we've seen so far is Corbyn talking about the things that I mentioned earlier on. These basically the things that the capitalist class don't want monopolies in should be nationalised.
We might know what they're going to say, but we should wait for them to say it.
But Corbyn has already said it. I'd suggest.
I don't think the idea is to have a leaflet attacking them. It's an idea to have a leaflet advocating socialism and putting the case for socialism before them. It doesn't have to be just say, look, something like, you're discontented, you want to do something. We've actually got a leaflet called You Want Something Better or something like that. You know, it doesn't have to be a polemical leaflet.
We've got several leaflets like that, but the question was, do we want to have a leaflet addressed to this new party? So specifically about that.
Sorry, I spoke without my hand up. But yeah, I think it would be a good idea to put out a leaflet when we know a little bit more about what they're saying, just so we can come up with certain policies. We know generally what they're going to say, but putting out a general leaflet is not going to appeal to people who are kind of already interested in joining, I suspect. Sorry.
Okay, thanks, Laura. Right, John, I think.
Yes, I just wanted to say what others have already said, and that is that I think we should wait until such time as we know what their policies or what they say their policies are. We know the kind of things that they're going to say, but let them say it, and then let's have a leaflet that concentrates more on what they're saying rather than what we expect them to say. There's no reason why we can't, in the meantime, distribute these more general leaflets if we want to do something like that. Thanks.
Okay, well, that seems to be the majority opinion. But anyway, our branch in London is going to be distributing leaflets to these two meetings and to the one against racism. But whether we'll go to and do the Tommy Robinson people, we'll have to decide. Does anybody else want to say anything on this then? Or do you want to know what's on next week? Right.
Yeah, what's on next week, please, Adam?
Oh, sorry. But I know what the title of next week's meeting is. I know who the speaker is, but I don't know what exactly he's going to talk about. The title is Capitalism's Big, Beautiful Pyramid Scheme and the Price of Freedom, and Richard Field will explain what it means. So that's for next week. So if nobody else has got any question, anything to say, can somebody close the meeting? I mean.